the chapter including the discourse about the Patali villages. 1. The first discourse about Nibbana. Thus I heard. At one time the Gracious One was dwelling near Sarvati, in Jeta's wood, at Anathapindika's monastery. Then at that time the Gracious One was instructing, rousing, enthusing and cheering the monks with a Dhamma talk connected with emancipation. Those monks, after making it their goal, applying their minds, considering it with all their mind, were listening to Dhamma with an attentive ear. Then the Gracious One, having understood the significance of it, on that occasion uttered this exalted utterance. There is that sphere, monks, where there is no earth, no water, no fire, no air, no sphere of infinite space, no sphere of infinite consciousness, no sphere of nothingness, no sphere of neither perception nor non-perception. Know this world, no world beyond, neither moon nor sun. There, monks, I say, there is surely no coming, no going, no persisting, no passing away, no rebirth. It is quite without support, unmoving, without an object. Just this is the end of suffering. Two. The second discourse about Nibbana. Thus I heard, at one time the Gracious One was dwelling near Sarvati, in Jeta's wood, at Anathapindika's monastery. Then at that time the Gracious One was instructing, rousing, enthusing, and cheering the monks with a Dhamma talk connected with emancipation. Those monks, after making it their goal, applying their minds, considering it with all their mind, were listening to Dhamma with an attentive ear. Then the Gracious One, having understood the significance of it, on that occasion uttered this exalted utterance. What is called the uninclined emancipation is hard to see, for it is not easy to see the truth. For the one who knows, who has penetrated craving, for the one who sees, there is nothing, no defilements. Three. The third discourse about Nibbana. Thus I heard, at one time the Gracious One was dwelling near Sarvati, in Jeta's wood, at Anathapindika's monastery. Then at that time the Gracious One was instructing, rousing, enthusing, and cheering the monks with a Dhamma talk connected with emancipation. Those monks, after making it their goal, applying their minds, considering it with all their mind, were listening to Dhamma with an attentive ear. Then the Gracious One, having understood the significance of it, on that occasion uttered this exalted utterance. There is, monks, an unborn, unbecome, unmade, unconditioned. If, monks, there were not that unborn, unbecome, unmade, unconditioned, you could not know an escape here from the born, become, made and conditioned. But because there is an unborn, unbecome, unmade, unconditioned, therefore you do know an escape from the born, become, made and conditioned. 4. The fourth discourse about Nibbana. Thus I heard, at one time the Gracious One was dwelling near Sarvati, in Jeta's wood, at Anathapindika's monastery. Then at that time the Gracious One was instructing, rousing, enthusing, and cheering the monks with a Dhamma talk connected with emancipation. Those monks, after making it their goal, applying their minds, considering it with all their mind, were listening to Dhamma with an attentive ear. Then the Gracious One, having understood the significance of it, on that occasion uttered this exalted utterance. For the dependent there is agitation, for the independent there is no agitation. When there is no agitation, there is calm, When there is calm, there is no inclining. When there is no inclining, there is no coming or going. When there is no coming or going, there is no passing away and rebirth. When there is no passing away and rebirth, there is no here or hereafter or in between the two. Just this is the end of suffering. Five. The Discourse about Chunda. Thus I heard. At one time the Gracious One was walking on walking tour amongst the Malas with a great community of monks and arrived at Parva. There the Gracious One dwelt near Parva, in Chunda the Smith's mango wood. Chunda the Smith heard, the Gracious One, it seems, is walking on walking tour amongst the Malas with a great community of monks, and has arrived at Parva, and is dwelling near Parva, in my mango wood. Then Chunda the Smith went to the Gracious One, and after going and worshipping the Gracious One, he sat down on one side. While Chunda the Smith sat on one side, the Gracious One instructed, roused, enthused, and cheered him with a Dhamma talk. Then Chunda the Smith, having been instructed, roused, enthused, and cheered by the Gracious One with a Dhamma talk, said to the Gracious One, may the Gracious One consent, reverend sir, to me offering him a meal on the morrow, together with a community of monks. The Gracious One consented by maintaining silence. Then Chunda the Smith, having understood the Gracious One's consent, after rising from his seat, worshipping and circumambulating the Gracious One, went away. Then with the passing of that night, Chunda the Smith, in his own residence, having had excellent comestibles and edibles made ready, and an abundance of tender pork, had the time announced to the Gracious One, saying, it is time, reverend sir, the meal is ready. Then the Gracious One, having dressed in the morning time, after picking up his bowl and robe, together with the community of monks, went to Chunda the Smith's residence, and after going, he sat down on the prepared seat. Having sat down, the Gracious One addressed Chunda the Smith, saying, serve me with the tender pork you have prepared, Chunda, but serve the community of monks with the other comestibles and edibles which have been prepared. Yes, reverend sir, said Chunda the Smith, and after replying to the Gracious One, he served the Gracious One with the tender pork that had been prepared, but served the community of monks with the other comestibles and edibles which had been prepared. Then the Gracious One addressed Chunda the Smith, saying, throw that leftover tender pork into a pit, Chunda, for I do not see Chunda in the world with its devas, Mara and Brahma, in this generation with its ascetics and brahmanas, princes and men, one who, having eaten it, could completely digest it, except for a realized one. Yes, reverend sir, said Chunda the Smith, and after replying to the Gracious One, and throwing what was left over of that tender pork into a pit, he went to the Gracious One, and after going and worshipping the Gracious One, he sat down on one side. While sat on one side, the Gracious One, after instructing, rousing, enthusing, and cheering Chunda the Smith with a Dhamma talk, having risen from his seat, went away. Then for the Gracious One, after eating Chunda the Smith's food, a painful affliction arose, dysentery, and strong feelings occurred, such as end in death. There the Gracious One, mindfully, with full awareness, bore those pains without being troubled. Then the Gracious One addressed Venerable Ananda, saying, come, Ananda, let us go to Kusinara. Yes, reverend sir, Venerable Ananda replied to the Gracious One. Having eaten Chunda the Smith's food, so I have heard, the firm one experienced a very strong affliction such as ends in death. For the teacher who had eaten tender pork, a very strong sickness arose. While still purging, the Gracious One said, I will go to the city of Kusinara. Then the Gracious One, having gone down from the road, went to the root of a certain tree. And after going, he addressed Venerable Ananda, saying, "Come now, Ananda, prepare the outer robe folded in four for me. I am weary, Ananda, and will sit down." "Yes, Reverend Sir," said Venerable Ananda. And after replying to the Gracious One, he prepared the outer robe folded in four, and the Gracious One sat down on the prepared seat. While sat, the Gracious One addressed Venerable Ananda, saying, "Come now, Ananda, bring drinking water. I am thirsty, Ananda, and will drink." After that was said, Venerable Ananda said this to the Gracious One, "Just now, Reverend Sir, 500 wagons have passed by, and the little water that flows, having been churned by the wheels, is stirred up and disturbed. The Kukuta River is not far away, with transparent water, agreeable water, cool water, pure water, with beautiful banks, a delightful place. There the Gracious One can drink drinking water and can cool his limbs." For a second time the Gracious One addressed Venerable Ananda, saying, "Come now, Ananda, bring drinking water. I am thirsty, Ananda, and will drink." For a second time Venerable Ananda said this to the Gracious One, "Just now, Reverend Sir, 500 wagons have passed by, and the little water that flows, having been churned by the wheels, is stirred up and disturbed. The Kukuta River is not far away, with transparent water, agreeable water, cool water, pure water, with beautiful banks, a delightful place. There the Gracious One can drink drinking water and can cool his limbs." For a third time the Gracious One addressed Venerable Ananda, saying, "Come now, Ananda, bring drinking water. I am thirsty, Ananda, and will drink." "Yes, Reverend Sir," said Venerable Ananda. And after replying to the Gracious One and taking the bowl, he went to the river. Then that little river that was flowing, which had been churned by the wheels and was stirred up and disturbed, as Venerable Ananda was going, flowed transparent, clear and undisturbed. Then it occurred to Venerable Ananda, "Surely it is wonderful, friend, surely it is marvellous, friend, the realized one's great power and great majesty, in that that little river that is flowing, which has been churned by wheels and is stirred up and disturbed, as I was going, flowed transparent, clear and undisturbed." After taking a bowl of drinking water, he went to the Gracious One. And after going, he said this to the Gracious One, "It is wonderful, Reverend Sir. It is marvellous, Reverend Sir. The realized one's great power and great majesty. In that that little river that is flowing, which has been churned by wheels and is stirred up and disturbed, as I was going, flowed transparent, clear and undisturbed. Please drink the drinking water, Gracious One. Please drink the drinking water, Fortunate One." Then the Gracious One drank the drinking water. Then the Gracious One, with a great community of monks, went to the river Kukuta, and after going and entering into the river Kukuta, bathing and drinking and coming back out, went to the mango wood. And after going, he addressed Venerable Chandika, saying, "Come now, Chandika, prepare the outer robe folded in four for me. I am weary, Chandika, and will lie down." "Yes, Reverend Sir," said Venerable Chandika. And after replying to the Gracious One, he prepared the outer robe folded in four. Then the Gracious One lay down on his right side in the lion's posture, after placing one foot on top of the other, mindfully, with full awareness, having applied his mind to the thought of rising. And Venerable Chandika sat down right there in front of the Gracious One. The Awakened One, having gone to the little river Kukuta, which had water that was transparent, pleasant and clear, the Teacher, very weary, entered the river. The Realized One, who is unmatched here in the world. After washing and drinking, the teacher came out, and in the middle of the group of monks at the front, the teacher, the gracious one, having taught the Dhamma here, the great sage went to the mango wood. He addressed the monk called Chandaka, saying, "Spread out the lying robe folded in four for me." Chunda, urged by the one with developed mind, very quickly spread the robe folded in four. The teacher, very weary, lay down, with Chunda sat right there at the front. Then the gracious one addressed Venerable Ananda, saying, "It may be, Ananda, that someone might cause remorse for the smith Chunda, saying, 'There is no gain for you, friend Chunda. It is a poor gain for you, friend Chunda, in that the realized one, after eating his last alms food from you, attained complete emancipation. If there is remorse for Chunda the smith, Ananda, drive it out in this way, saying, "There is a gain for you, friend Chunda. It is a good gain for you, friend Chunda, in that the realized one, after eating his last alms food from you, attained complete emancipation." I heard this face to face with the gracious one, friend Chunda. I learned it face to face. There are these two alms food which have the same excellent fruit, have the same excellent result. That is a greater fruit, a greater result than other alms food. Which two? That alms food which, after eating, the realized one awakens to the unsurpassed perfect awakening, and that alms food which, after eating, the realized one attains complete emancipation in the emancipation element which has no basis for attachment remaining. These are the two alms food which have the same fruit, that is a greater fruit, a greater result than other alms food. Friend Chunda the smith has accumulated a good deed that is conducive to long life. Friend Chunda the smith has accumulated a good deed that is conducive to beauty. Friend Chunda the smith has accumulated a good deed that is conducive to happiness. Friend Chunda the smith has accumulated a good deed that is conducive to fame. Friend Chunda the smith has accumulated a good deed that is conducive to heaven. Friend Chunda the smith has accumulated a good deed that is conducive to sovereignty. If there is remorse for Chunda the smith, Ananda, you should drive it out in this way. Then the gracious one, having understood the significance of it, on that occasion uttered this exalted utterance: "For the one who gives, merit is increased. From restraint, hatred is not accumulated. The skillful one gives up what is bad. Through the destruction of passion, hatred and delusion, he is emancipated." Six. The Discourse about the Patali Villages. Thus I heard, at one time the Gracious One was walking on walking tour amongst the Magadans with a great community of monks and arrived at Patalighama. The lay followers of Patalighama heard, "The Gracious One, it seems, is walking on walking tour amongst the Magadans with a great community of monks and has arrived at Patalighama." Then the lay followers of Patalighama went to the Gracious One, and after going and worshipping the Gracious One, they sat down on one side. While sat on one side, the lay followers of Patalighama said this to the Gracious One: "May the Gracious One consent, Reverend Sir, to stay in our rest house." The Gracious One consented by maintaining silence. Then the lay followers of Patalighama, having understood the Gracious One's consent, after rising from their seats, worshipping and circumambulating the Gracious One, went to their rest house. And after going and spreading the mats so that the rest house was spread all over, and preparing the seats, setting up the water pot and lighting the oil lamp, they went to the Gracious One. And after going and worshipping the Gracious One, they stood on one side. While stood on one side, the lay followers of Patalighama said this to the Gracious One: "The rest house is spread with mats all over, Reverend Sir. The seats are prepared, the water pot is set up, and the oil lamp is lit. Now is the time for whatever the Gracious One is thinking, Reverend Sir. Then the Gracious One, having dressed, after picking up his bowl and robe, together with the community of monks, went to the rest house. And after going, washing his feet, and entering the rest house, he sat down near to the middle pillar, facing the east. And the community of monks, having washed their feet, and entering the rest house, sat down near the west wall, facing the east, having the Gracious One at the front. Also the lay followers of Patali Gama, having washed their feet, entered the rest house, sat down near the east wall, facing the west, having the Gracious One at the front. Then the Gracious One addressed the lay followers of Patali Gama, saying, "There are these five dangers, householders, for one lacking in virtue, for one who has lost his virtue. What are the five? Here, householders, one lacking in virtue, one who has lost his virtue, because of being heedless, undergoes a great loss of riches. This is the first danger for one lacking in virtue, for one who has lost his virtue. Furthermore, householders, for one lacking in virtue, for one who has lost his virtue, a bad report goes round. This is the second danger for one lacking in virtue, for one who has lost his virtue. Furthermore, householders, one lacking in virtue, one who has lost his virtue, whatever assembly he goes to, whether an assembly of nobles, or an assembly of brahmanas, or an assembly of householders, or an assembly of ascetics, he goes without confidence, with confusion. This is the third danger for one lacking in virtue, for one who has lost his virtue. Furthermore, householders, one lacking in virtue, one who has lost his virtue, dies bewildered. This is the fourth danger for one lacking in virtue, for one who has lost his virtue. Furthermore, householders, one lacking in virtue, one who has lost his virtue, at the breakup of the body after death, arises in the lower world, in an unfortunate destiny, in the fall, in the nether regions. This is the fifth danger for one lacking in virtue, for one who has lost his virtue. These are the five dangers, householders, for one lacking in virtue, for one who has lost his virtue. There are these five advantages, householders, for one who is virtuous, for one accomplished in virtue. What are the five? Here, householders, one who is virtuous, one accomplished in virtue, because of being heedful, obtains a great mass of riches. This is the first advantage for one who is virtuous, for one accomplished in virtue. Furthermore, householders, of one who is virtuous, of one accomplished in virtue, a good report goes round. This is the second advantage for one who is virtuous, for one accomplished in virtue. Furthermore, householders, one who is virtuous, one accomplished in virtue, whatever assembly he goes to, whether an assembly of nobles, or an assembly of brahmanas, or an assembly of householders, or an assembly of ascetics, goes with confidence, without confusion. This is the third advantage for one who is virtuous, for one accomplished in virtue. Furthermore, householders, one who is virtuous, one accomplished in virtue, dies without being bewildered. This is the fourth advantage for one who is virtuous, for one accomplished in virtue. Furthermore, householders, one who is virtuous, one accomplished in virtue, at the breakup of the body after death, arises in a fortunate destiny, in a heavenly world. This is the fifth advantage for one who is virtuous, for one accomplished in virtue. These are the five advantages, householders, for one who is virtuous, for one accomplished in virtue. Then the Gracious One, after instructing, rousing, enthusing, and cheering the lay followers of Patali Gama for most of the night with a Dhamma talk, dismissed them, saying, "The night has passed, householders. Now is the time for whatever you are thinking." Then the lay followers of Patali Gama, after greatly rejoicing and gladly receiving this word of the Gracious One, rising from their seats, worshipping and circumambulating the Gracious One, went away. Then the Gracious One, not long after the lay followers of Patalikama had gone, entered an empty place. Then at that time the Magadhan chief ministers Sunida and Vasukara were building up a city at Patalikama to ward off the Vajjayans. Then at that time a great many devatas, thousands upon thousands, were taking possession of grounds at Patalikama. In that place where the great devatas took possession of grounds, there the powerful rulers and great royal ministers' minds inclined to building up residences. In that place where the middling devatas took possession of grounds, there the middling rulers and middling royal ministers' minds inclined to taking up residences. In that place where the lower devatas took possession of grounds, there the lower rulers and lower royal ministers' minds inclined to building up residences. The Gracious One saw with his divine eye, which is purified and surpasses that of normal men, that those devatas, thousands upon thousands, were taking possession of grounds at Patalikama. In that place where the great devatas took possession of grounds, there the powerful rulers and great royal ministers' minds inclined to building up residences. In that place where the middling devatas took possession of grounds, there the middling rulers and middling royal ministers' minds inclined to building up residences. In that place where the lower devatas took possession of grounds, there the lower rulers and lower royal ministers' minds inclined to building up residences. Then towards the time of dawn, having risen from his seat, the Gracious One addressed Venerable Ananda, saying, "Now who, Ananda, is building a city at Patalikama?" "The Magadhan chief ministers Sunida and Vasukara, Reverend Sir, are building up a city at Patalikama to ward off the Vajjayans." It is just as though, Ananda, after consulting with the Tarvatimsa Devas, in the same way, Ananda, the Magadhan chief ministers Sunida and Vasukara are building up a city at Patalikama to ward off the Vajjayans. Here, Ananda, I saw with my divine eye, which is purified and surpasses that of normal men, that a great many devatas, thousands upon thousands, were taking possession of grounds at Patalikama. In that place where the great devatas took possession of grounds, there the powerful rulers and great royal ministers' minds inclined to building up residences. In that place where the middling devatas took possession of grounds, there the middling rulers and middling royal ministers' minds inclined to building up residences. In that place where the lower devatas took possession of grounds, there the lower rulers and lower royal ministers' minds inclined to building up residences. For as long, Ananda, as there is an Aryan sphere of influence, for as long as there is trade, this basket-opening Pataliputta will be the chief city. For Pataliputta, Ananda, there will be three dangers, from fire and from water and from the breaking of an alliance. Then the Magadhan chief ministers Sunida and Vasukara went to the Gracious One, and after going, they exchanged greetings with the Gracious One, and after exchanging courteous talk and greetings, they stood on one side. While stood on one side, the Magadhan chief ministers Sunida and Vasukara said this to the Gracious One, "May Gotama consent, dear sir, to us offering him a meal today, together with the community of monks." The Gracious One consented by maintaining silence. Then the Magadhan chief ministers Sunida and Vasukara, having understood the Gracious One's consent, went to their own dwelling, and after going in their own dwellings, having had excellent comestibles and edibles made ready, announced the time to the Gracious One, saying, "It is time, dear Gotama, the meal is ready." Then the Gracious One, having dressed in the morning time, after picking up his bowl and robe, together with the community of monks, went to the dwelling of the Magadan chief ministers Sunida and Vasakara, and after going he sat down on the prepared seat. Then the Magadan chief ministers Sunida and Vasakara with their own hands served and satisfied the community of monks with the Buddha at its head with excellent comestibles and edibles. Then the Magadan chief ministers Sunida and Vasakara, when the Gracious One had eaten and washed his hand and bowl, having taken a low seat, sat down on one side. While sat on one side, the Gracious One rejoiced the Magadan chief ministers Sunida and Vasakara with these verses. In that place where he makes his dwelling, having entertained the wise and virtuous here, the restrained who live the spiritual life, he should dedicate a gift to the devatas who are in that place. Honoured, they pay honour. Revered, they revere him. Thereafter, they have compassion on him, as a mother on her own son. A man whom the devatas have compassion on always sees what is auspicious. Then the Gracious One, after rejoicing the Magadan chief ministers Sunida and Vasakara with these verses, and rising from his seat, went away. Then at that time the Magadan chief ministers Sunida and Vasakara were following close behind the Gracious One, thinking, that gate by which the ascetic Gotama leaves will get the name the Gotama Gate, and that ford by which he crosses the river Ganga will get the name the Gotama Ford. Then that gate by which the Gracious One left got the name the Gotama Gate. Then the Gracious One went to the river Ganga. Then at that time the river Ganga was full to the brim and could be drunk from by crows perched on the banks. Some of the people were seeking boats, some were seeking floats, and some were binding rafts, desiring to go from this shore to the shore beyond. Then the Gracious One, just as a strong man might stretch out a bent arm or bend in an outstretched arm, so did he vanish from the near bank of the river Ganga and reappeared on the far bank, together with the community of monks. The Gracious One saw those people, some seeking boats, some seeking floats, and some binding rafts, desiring to go from this shore to the shore beyond. Then the Gracious One, having understood the significance of it, on that occasion uttered this exalted utterance. Those who cross over a sea or a lake do so after making a bridge and leaving the pond behind. While people are still binding together a raft, intelligent people have crossed over. Seven. The Discourse on the Two Paths. Thus I heard. At one time the Gracious One was going along the high road amongst the Kosalans with Venerable Nagasamala as the attendant ascetic who followed behind him. The Venerable Nagasamala saw two paths on the road, and having seen that, he said this to the Gracious One, "This is the path, Reverend Sir. Let us go by this one, Gracious One." After that was said, the Gracious One said this to Venerable Nagasamala, "This is the path, Nagasamala. Let us go by this one." For a second time, Venerable Nagasamala said this to the Gracious One, "This is the path, Reverend Sir. Let us go by this one, Gracious One." After that was said, the Gracious One said this to Venerable Nagasamala, "This is the path, Nagasamala. Let us go by this one." For a third time, Venerable Nagasamala said this to the Gracious One, "This is the path, Reverend Sir. Let us go by this one, Gracious One." After that was said, the Gracious One said this to Venerable Nagasamala, "This is the path, Nagasamala. Let us go by this one." Then Venerable Nagasamala, having put the Gracious One's bowl and robe on the floor right there and then, went away, saying, "This is the Gracious One's bowl and robe, Reverend Sir." Then as Venerable Nagasamala was going along by that path, thieves who had gone along the road attacked him with their hands and feet, broke his bowl, and tore his double robe. Then Venerable Naga Samala, with his broken bowl and torn double robe, went to the Gracious One, and after going and worshipping the Gracious One, he sat down on one side. While sat on one side, Venerable Naga Samala said this to the Gracious One, "Here, Reverend Sir, as I was going along by that path, thieves who had gone along the path attacked me with their hands and feet, broke my bowl, and tore my double robe." Then the Gracious One, having understood the significance of it, on that occasion uttered this exalted utterance, "Walking together, dwelling as one, the Perfect One mixes with ignorant people. Having understood that, he abandons bad deeds as the milk-drinking heron abandons water." 8. The Discourse about Visakha. Thus I heard, at one time the Gracious One was dwelling near Sarvati, at the Eastern Monastery, in Megara's mother's mansion. Then at that time Megara's mother Visakha's granddaughter, who was beloved and dear, had died. Then Megara's mother Visakha, with wet clothes and hair, in the middle of the day, went to the Gracious One. And after going and worshipping the Gracious One, she sat down on one side. While sat on one side, the Gracious One said this to Megara's mother Visakha, "Now where have you come from, Visakha, with wet clothes and hair? And why are you coming here in the middle of the day?" "My granddaughter, who was beloved and dear, Reverend Sir, has died. That is why, with wet clothes and hair, I am coming here in the middle of the day." "Would you like, Visakha, as many children and grandchildren as there are people in Sarvati?" "I would like, Gracious One, as many children and grandchildren as there are people in Sarvati." "But how many people, Visakha, die every day in Sarvati?" 10 people, Reverend Sir, die every day in Sarvati." 9 people, Reverend Sir, die every day in Sarvati." 8 people, Reverend Sir, die every day in Sarvati." 7 people, Reverend Sir, die every day in Sarvati." 6 people, Reverend Sir, die every day in Sarvati." 5 people, Reverend Sir, die every day in Sarvati." 4 people, Reverend Sir, die every day in Sarvati." 3 people, Reverend Sir, die every day in Sarvati." 2 people, Reverend Sir, die every day in Sarvati." 1 person, Reverend Sir, dies every day in Sarvati." "Sarvati is never secluded from people who are dying." "Now what do you think, Visakha? Would you ever be without wet clothes and hair?" "Surely not, Reverend Sir. I have had enough, Reverend Sir, with so many children and grandchildren." "For those who have 100 loves, Visakha, they have 100 sufferings. For those who have 90 loves, they have 90 sufferings. For those who have 80 loves, they have 80 sufferings. For those who have 70 loves, they have 70 sufferings. For those who have 60 loves, they have 60 sufferings. For those who have 50 loves, they have 50 sufferings. For those who have 40 loves, they have 40 sufferings. For those who have 30 loves, they have 30 sufferings. For those who have 20 loves, they have 20 sufferings. For those who have 10 loves, they have 10 sufferings. For those who have 9 loves, they have 9 sufferings. For those who have 8 loves, they have 8 sufferings. For those who have 7 loves, they have 7 sufferings. For those who have 6 loves, they have 6 sufferings. For those who have 5 loves, they have 5 sufferings. For those who have 4 loves, they have 4 sufferings. For those who have 3 loves, they have 3 sufferings. For those who have 2 loves, they have 2 sufferings. For those who have 1 love, they have 1 suffering. For those who have nothing, they have no sorrow. They are griefless, dust-free, and without despair, I say. Then the Gracious One, having understood the significance of it, on that occasion uttered this exalted utterance, "Whatever griefs or lamentations there are and the many kinds of suffering in the world. These all arise because of love. Without loves, these do not originate. Therefore, they are happy and free from grief, who are without love for anything in the world. Therefore, those wanting what is griefless, dustless, should not have love for anything in the world. Nine. The first discourse about Dabba. Thus I heard. At one time the Gracious One was dwelling near Rajagaha in bamboo wood, at the squirrel's feeding place. Then Venerable Dabba Malaputta went to the Gracious One, and after going and worshipping the Gracious One, he sat down on one side. While sat on one side, Venerable Dabba Malaputta said this to the Gracious One, "Now is the time for my complete emancipation, Fortunate One." "Now is the time for whatever you are thinking, Dabba." Then Venerable Dabba Malaputta, after rising from his seat, worshipping and circumambulating the Gracious One, after going up into the sky and sitting in cross-legged posture in the air in the firmament, entering the fire element and emerging, attained complete emancipation. Then while Venerable Dabba Malaputta, after going up into the sky and sitting in cross-legged posture in the air in the firmament, entering the fire element and emerging, was attaining complete emancipation, his body burning and being consumed, there was no charcoal and no ash evident. Just as while ghee or oil is burning and being consumed, there is no charcoal and no ash evident, so also, while Venerable Dabba Malaputta, after going up into the sky and sitting in cross-legged posture in the air in the firmament, entering the fire element and emerging, was attaining complete emancipation, his body burning and being consumed, there was no charcoal and there was no ash evident. Then the Gracious One, having understood the significance of it, on that occasion uttered this exalted utterance. The body broke up, perception ceased, all feelings became cool, mental processes were pacified, consciousness came to rest. 10. The second discourse about Dabba. Thus I heard. At one time the Gracious One was dwelling near Sarvati, in Jeta's wood, at Anathapindika's monastery. There it was that the Gracious One addressed the monks, saying, "Monks, reverend sir," those monks replied to the Gracious One, and the Gracious One said this, "While Venerable Dabba Malaputta monks, after going up into the sky and sitting in cross-legged posture in the sky in the firmament, entering the fire element and emerging, was attaining complete emancipation, his body burning and being consumed, there was no charcoal and no ash evident. Just as while ghee or oil is burning and being consumed, there is no charcoal and no ash evident, so also while Venerable Dabba Malaputta, after going up into the sky and sitting in cross-legged posture in the air in the firmament, entering the fire element and emerging, was attaining complete emancipation, his body burning and being consumed, there was no charcoal and no ash evident." Then the Gracious One, having understood the significance of it, on that occasion uttered this exalted utterance. Just as for an iron bar which is struck by fire and heat and gradually cooling, the destiny of that heat is not known, so it is for those perfectly free who have crossed over the flood of bondage to sense pleasures. There is no known destiny for those who have attained an agitated happiness. The text of the Udana is complete.